It's December 22nd, 2008, and we're starting our ninth session with Robert Carr, who's in Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay in India. And we're at the point in his life and experience around 1979 when his lover and friend Bob Powers has committed suicide. And Robert is looking at his life. And what is the drama going on at the restaurant that you manage, the Great Crepe, at this point?
Well, there was a little power struggle going on between myself and the manager, the new manager. That I became the chef and was just doing the cooking and the teaching and supervising that. And the management was taken over by someone else who was more involved with being a psychologist and trying to treat these people. I left the Crepe, and I took a little vacation and worked on my house in Woodacre. And one afternoon, I was driving I had a little Datsun sports car, and I was driving along Center Boulevard, returning to Woodacre, and I saw there was a guy hitchhiking. And I recognized that he'd been in the Great Crepe for lunch, and once he spoke to me, and I remember him being a nice guy, and we talked for an hour, and anyway, I offered him a ride, and he remembered me and our conversation we had. He'd talked to me about what to do. By the way, his name was Paul Arms, and he was 24 years old, and, you know, I was older and kind of like the mentor image, you know. So anyway, I said, well, why don't we come up to my house and we'll have some coffee and talk and continue to talk. And during our conversation, I learned that he had read Krishnamurti and he'd dibble-dabbled with Osho, Rajneesh. He had visited the center in Portland, but he sort of found it kind of, I don't know, he saw through it kind of and didn't think it was his cup of tea. He wasn't interested in being a Rajneesh follower. Krishnamurti was more his interest. So I said, well, you know, listen. We talked, and I continued to see Paul off and on for a couple of weeks. And about this time, I was offered a job to take charge of another restaurant called the Crossroads, which was a fusion food restaurant in San Anselmo. They wanted to upgrade the menu and increase their business. And the owner hired me to come in and zap up the business if I could. He knew what I had done at the Great Crepe and how it was transformed from a small place to a good business. So anyway, I was working there, and Paul and his brother and friends used to come in for dinner. And I used to, you know, chat with him a little bit and became more and more interested in Paul and his enthusiasm for looking into these matters. And so one time I was talking with him, I said, listen, if you're really interested in Krishnamurti and you read his books and you're really interested, you know, he's talking in Ojai this summer, next coming month or something. I said, and I tell you what, I'll go with you if you want to go down there, and we'll take you in a weekend, a couple of his talks, and you see what you think about it. So he was interested with the idea, so we planned to go to Ojai, and I got off for a weekend, and we drove down to Ojai, California, and found a hotel. And I also knew a girl that had a small catering business. She was ex-wife of Ken Reed, who had a bookshop in Hollywood, and he had known Dada, and so Ken and I had connected, and I knew about his ex-wife having this catering business in Ojai. So we connected with her, and I got a hotel. We got a hotel. And we attended one of Kay's talks in the morning on Saturday, I believe. And everything went fine, and Paul and I chatted about it. And, you know, I spent the evening, I think, I'm not sure what we did. Anyway, the next day, we went back to her in the morning for another talk, and I remember sitting there with Paul in fairly close to where Krishnamurti sits on a small platform there under the trees, and I remember thinking, well, God, I've listened to him, I've talked to him, I've chatted with him. What am I doing here? I thought, I came because of Paul's interested, and I'm interested in Paul, and it was just sort of, I was questioning myself, why am I here? I know what he's going to say next. Yeah, I can give the talk with him, sort of. But anyway, I said, yeah, but it's still interesting. I still find this vitality and this something, this quality that's there. And that morning, as Krishnamurti was talking, he said, the Buddha had several disciples that were enlightened. And he asked them, why do you come to listen? And they said, because they enjoyed listening to the Dharma, the truth. And I said, yeah. As if he had read my mind, I was wondering. That's why I sit here, because I enjoy listening to these statements that he's making. And as the talk went on, I got deeper and deeper into myself and listening to him. And at the end of the talk, I thought it was almost sacrilegious to say anything or to move about and talk with other people. But that's what everybody was doing. After he left, everybody was looking at the books and the tapes and the videos, and we ran across a couple of friends from Marin County, two girls, and they were kind of, they're silly and talking, and I thought, Jesus, it's like a circus here almost, a carnival, and it was causing me to become very disturbed inwardly. I don't know what it was. I was thinking probably, what am I doing here? After all these years, I'm still listening to this guy, and just a lot of turmoil was going on inside of me. So I said to Paul, I said, let's get out of here. I really feel uncomfortable. And so he said, okay. So we walked along the pathway out of the compound area where the books were being sold and so forth. We were headed towards the Ranch House Restaurant, which is a very famous landmark in Ojai. Alan Hooker and his wife, they run the restaurant, and they're friends of Krishnamurti. And I'd talked with Alan in the past, met him several times, and liked him very much. He was a really sweet guy. And then suddenly, I just felt that I couldn't walk anymore. I couldn't stand even. I felt this tremendous surge of energy that was swirling around inside of my skull, my brain. And I said to Paul, I said, I'm sorry, I can't walk. I said, I've got to sit down. And I said, just bear with me here. And I sat down on the ground, and this energy just kept building and building and building up. And I thought, I just can't take this anymore. It's just too strong. My body can't take it. My brain can't take it. And suddenly there was a burst, just a flash of immense energy just spewed out. And then I felt very, very, very relaxed. And I sat there, and I told Paul, can I just sit here for a while? And I felt very, very, very calm and relaxed, and almost as if, I wasn't there anymore. There was just this body sitting there, just like I was, felt like a robot almost. And then after a while, Paul said, we need to go see Ken's wife. She's invited us for lunch, and there's some other people there at her little shop. I said, okay. And I felt just like I was on automatic pilot. And there was an tremendous extended awareness of everything around me. I remember I felt I could see further than I normally could see. And I was aware of things on the left and the right sides of me, like I had, my vision had increased. And the colors were all intense. And as we crossed the street, leaving the Oak Grove Krishnamurti site there, I remember just the cars coming and going, but I had no sense of any danger. I knew how to put one foot in front of the other. And that's all I was interested in, but just getting across the street. And then when we got moved along, I told Paul, I said, just bear with me. I said, I can walk, but I'm having, I just have to go slow. And he was, he didn't have any reaction about how what was happening to me. And that was cool, I thought, because that it just he went along with it. Well, we got to her shop. And I sat down on a chair, and there were several other people there, and all this conversation was going on, and it was as if I was separate from it all. I was in the distance. I could hear it, but it didn't have any meaning to me at all. I just sat there, just consciously aware of my surroundings. So, and finally, lunch was served, and I ate the food very slowly and quietly, without any interest at all. And after a little while, we finished. I think I said to Paul, I said, I think we need to get back to the Grove and get the car and go back to the hotel. I feel like I need to lie down. And so we excused ourselves, and we got back to the Alan Hooker's restaurant and passed that. And then the remarkable thing happened. I saw Krishnamurti, and he was planting a tree with some people. And I stood there looking at him in wonderment almost. And then quietly and suddenly he left, and he came up the trail, and we came head face to face. Now, I had no inclination to respond or to say anything to him at all. It was very strange. I had no desire to say, hello, Krishnaji, And we just looked at each other, and he looked very, very intently. And I remember looking back at him, and then we parted, and Paul was amazed. He stood there and looked at this, and he said, what's happening, Bob? And I said, I don't know what's happening. Anyway, we found the car, and Paul drove. I couldn't drive, and we got back to the hotel, and I lied down on the bed, and he said, what's happening to you? And I said, I don't know. I said, I'm just in some altered state. It's like being on psychotropic drugs. I said, without taking a drug, I'm in that state, similar state. And I lied there for some time, some hours, and then he said, and look, I can't remember Ken's wife's name, so Robin. So I said, Paul said, she's invited us over to her house because we're going to have dinner at Alan Hooker's restaurant with her tonight. I said, okay, is that what the program is? That's fine, I said. So we went to her little house, which is right across the street from where Krishnamurti lives, in his house, out there in the outskirts of an orange grove on the outskirts of Ojai. So we got there, and I sat. We were sitting outside. Her little house was kind of an inside-outside house. It was she had a little kitchen and bedroom and living room, but part of her living was outside. It was real neat. But in Ojai, you can have that kind of arrangement because of the temperature and the summers are long there. So I remember sitting there in the chair, and Paul was talking with her, and they were chattering away, and I was just unaware of what they were saying. I was just taking in the scene, and then I noticed that the light was changing and the sun was setting. And then I begin to experience this waves of bliss, as it were. It's the only way I can describe it. We're coming. It was as if the land was being touched by something. And that bliss was swelling up and building up and just was pervading the whole land and moving across the land over us, enveloping us in this sense of bliss. Now I knew all what was going on, and I was just staying with it, going, giving it its life, and tears were streaming down my cheeks as I felt this intense, oneness and bliss with everything. And then she said, "Paul, Robert, what's going on?" And I couldn't answer her. And then she said, "Oh, this happens around Christian G." She said, "People experience all sorts of things," and I couldn't answer her. But after some, on a passage of time, this experience lightened up, and we had a soft drink of some kind, and we waited and waited. And then she said, "Okay," Paul said, "it's time to go have dinner. We have a 6 o'clock table arrangement we made." So the three of us drove off in my little Datsun, which three can barely ride in it. One of us had to ride in the jump seat behind the main seats. And so we got to Alan's place, and I was sitting there, and I remember, and the food was ordered, and it was some kind of Indian vegetarian meal that he had created for the... And we were eating it, and he came over and sat down and chatted with us, and I remember just, I don't know, I was on automatic pilot. I was talking, but it just didn't have any meaning to me at all. I don't know. Alan didn't notice too much that I was, but I wasn't talking. I didn't initiate. That was it. I didn't initiate anything. I only responded. Yeah. So after it was over, we said goodbye. We went back to the hotel, and we went to sleep. And then in the middle of the night, I woke up with the most tremendous headache that I've ever had. And all the rest of the night, I lie there in this excruciating pain. And in the morning, Paul said, "Are you okay?" I said, "No, I have this terrible headache, just a horrible headache." And he said, "Do you want some medicine for it?" And I said, "Well, it's Sunday. I don't know if anybody's, any shops are open." I said, I don't think anything will help it. I said, it's too strong." And it was Monday, the talk was over. I said, "I think we just better drive back to San Francisco," or something like that. And so we said, "Okay." So we packed up, checked out of the hotel. And I remember about halfway driving up the coast, I said to Paul, "I think I can drive." And I was thinking maybe this will take my mind off of the headache and I won't feel it. But it continued and continued all the way up till we got back to Woodacre late at night. And it takes a good 8 hours, something like that. And I remember going to sleep, and the headache was still on. And I said to Paul, I said, "I have to go to work tomorrow morning." I said, "I hope I can make it." And so anyway, in the morning, the headache was still there. And I told Paul I would see him later. And I got in the car and I drove to the restaurant, Crossroads. I remember unlocking the door and going in. And as soon as I walked in, the headache went away. I thought, how strange. It just amazed me. And I went to work, and one of the girls who was a waitress there was very curious as to what happened in my going to Ojai and listening to Christian Rudy. She liked all the spiritual stuff. So I remember sitting down in a booth and talking with her. a little bit. And again, this oceanic consciousness descended on me. And we sat there for, I don't know, 30 minutes maybe. And I was just talking in this kind of oceanic way. And she was zonked out by it. And she just felt all this energy. Well, this was going on with people. And Paul Zamarian, who lived at the house, right away he noticed, he said, "Robert, what happened?" And I said, "I don't know what happened." I said, I'm in this other state of mind. And he liked all those things. Paul was a real metaphysician and interested in spirituality and so forth. So anyway, this Paul was there and hanging out with me. And I said to him, "You're like an anchor. If you're around, it helps." I said, "Otherwise it gets so intense," I said. So this was going on for days, and every time I would go to work, the headache and the abnormal consciousness would go away, and when I would leave and get back in the car and start driving back to Woodacre, I remember it would start again. I remember one afternoon coming back, I got off about 3 or 4 in the afternoon from work, and when I got into the area where the trees were, redwood trees, I remember stopping the car, and I was playing a tape on my car stereo, Simon, Seals and Croft. They were a real mellow band, and say two singers, and I remember listening to the music and being totally swept away by the lyrics. And I was looking at this giant redwood tree, and then I just, the bark, the tree, the isness of the tree just enveloped me, and I was no longer just, Robert, but I was the tree and everything else again. So when I got back home, I told Paul what was going on, and he said, "Maybe we should call Douglas." And he's into yoga and everything. And he lives in... Douglas was living not too far away. So Douglas came over that evening. And for a test, we didn't tell him what was going on. And we sat there. And then right away, Douglas said, "Oh, what happened?" He said, I sense this. You're not the normal, usual self." And I said, "Yeah." So I told him what was happening, and he said then, "Oh, you should get in touch with Yuji." because when I was with Yuji after his calamity, this was the same kind of energy I was experiencing with him. And you should write to him and get in touch with him. And I said, "Do you have his address?" He said, "Yeah, it's the same address in Switzerland." And so anyway, to make a long, long story shorter, I wrote to Yuji, and I told him a little bit of what was going on, and would I be able to see him and talk to him? After a few weeks, I got a week, maybe 10 days, I got a mail from him, and he said, "Yeah, you're most welcome. I'll be in India in September in Bangalore, and if you want to come, we can talk. I'll talk, we'll meet you, blah, blah." And I thought, Jesus, India? But this thing was so strong and so compelling and was continuing, going on and on and on. And other people that I went to see all noticed it also, and they all said, "Oh, it's some kind of Kundalini experience, or it's this, or it's that," So I told
Robert, you were still having the bliss intermittently with the pain. It was going back and forth. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, the pain was always there.
During the bliss, though.
Yeah.
No, the pain was there during the bliss.
It would lighten up but it was more after these experiences of bliss, we'll call it that, then the pain would come. The pain usually came at night and during my sleep. It would come at night during sleep. Sometimes during the daytime, but during the work, no, it would go away. Mm-hmm. It was like whenever it was appropriate not to have that pain, it wouldn't be there. And then when I was asleep, then it would come. and it was very strange. And I had all sorts of Vedantic-like experiences, like, you know, oneness and feelings, all these classic feelings and so forth that people describe and have described in India, especially.
And it was like being on LSD, right?
Yeah, it was the same kind of intensity, vibrance of color and sound and everything, and empathy with people, and they were also getting it too. They were getting turned on by the experience. So far, so I was like a catalyst. I could activate, you know. So I talked to Paul about it. I said, "What do you think you should do?" And he didn't know. And foggiest idea. So I said, "I think I've got to go to India." And I said, "I'm going to sell the house and end this part of my life and go to India and to see what happens." And so I contacted a real estate firm. They came and the usual, you know, looking at the house and pricing of it and so forth. And before the house was put on the market, I sold it. Mm-hmm. I sold it to one of the agents who saw the house. So it just seemed right. Everything just seemed click, 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 click.
And this is the Woodacre house.
Yeah. And Woodacre. I sold it four times what I paid for it.
Mm.
Markets had just really gone up. Crazy.
Well, you know, in the fall of 79, that's when Paul Volcker started raising the interest rates up to 20%, and gold went way up that fall. I don't know if you remember. You associated with that period. You associated with that period?
Yeah, and then 1980, there was a big drop.
And then you went into a recession.
Right, the Jimmy Carter's recession, yeah. So, to make a longer story shorter, the house sold very easily, and I sold it to one of the agents of the company that listed it. And before I knew it, Paul's mother gave him some money for a plane ticket, and I said, "I'll take care of your expenses, and we'll go to India. You'll meet Krishnamurti, and we'll listen to Jay Krishnamurti, and we'll continue the journey and see where it leads." And he was very apt pupil, as I might say.
Yeah. A pupil of you?
Yeah. What was happening? What was happening?
Yeah.
He was eager. He had a Volvo and he sold it, and everything just, you know, it was magic. Everything just dissolved. It was no problem, you know. And except we were a little early, so we decided to go to Japan, and after that, Thailand, Bali. We spent like 2 weeks in Bali, lounging around on the beaches and taking in the sights and the sounds of Bali. And I remember that I really enjoyed the beaches in Bali, the ocean, but not the city of Denpasar. I didn't like that at all. I felt very uncomfortable. And I kept saying I just need to be in a place like the beach, the quieter places.
Are you still in that bliss, pain, headache?
Yeah.
And you're going to see Jay Krishnamurti as well as UG?
Yeah, well, Jay Krishnamurti would be in India too at that time.
And Paul is only about 24 years old?
Yeah.
Are you lovers at that point?
Not exactly. We have this strong empathy, feeling of getting along intellectually, and it's not such a physical thing.
Yeah.
I think what happens was that I'm beginning to learn that one can have relationships in this world, you know, without it being, you know, just sexual, but one can be close to another and not so involved and so forth.
That's what you're learning in this period. You're learning that in that period.
Yeah. And but Paul was very beautiful, and I loved him very much. I mean, you know, we got along, and we just had such a closeness, you know, and feeling a groovy feeling, you know. And you know, he lost his father abandoned them when he was about 7 or 8 years old, and I think that maybe I was a father figure to him in a way, you know.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, whatever that psychological jargon, what it means. But, so we eventually ended up going to Sri Lanka, and we stayed a month there because we were still too early for India. Yuji wouldn't be there till, I think it was September, and it was just the first part of September. So we stayed with the Soises, the people that I had met before when Connie and I were in Sri Lanka.
And the guy with the brother, the guy who had
stayed at the same house. They were still open to have guests and were very nice and cordial. But Paul got very sick there. He got flu, and for a week he was down in sleeping and with a bad temperature most of the time. This happens to people when they come to Asia for the first time, usually. Not always, but usually. But anyway, after spending a month in Sri Lanka, we landed in Madras. It was still Madras then. They hadn't changed it to Chennai. And we stayed in Madras for some time and visited some of the places like the Theosophical Society and Adyar Beach. And I was taking him around, showing him all of Madras. It hadn't changed much in the 12 years that I had since I was last there. We stayed in the same hotel that Connie and I stayed at. It was kind of, in a way, like reliving my first India experience. But I was seeing that India had gone through a lot of changes, and Madras was not the sleepy town. It was now bustling with lots of people and cars, and it had really changed a lot. And I was, thinking, well, we'll go to Bangalore and maybe it'll be quieter and like more like the old Bangalore. But no, it had changed also. When I got to Bangalore, we checked into the Woodlands Hotel and decided we'd take an auto out to where the Bull Temple was, where Yuji's house, where he was staying. We found the little place he was staying, but he wasn't there. He was in Utik Canal with Mahesh Bhatt and Parveen Babi.
Who you did not meet yet. You had
right,
not met.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Parveen becomes becomes the most beautiful woman in the world, according to Time Magazine, and a famous Indian actress, but that's later.
Right. So we still hung in for a few more days, and then finally I called Chandrasekhar's telephone number. I had gotten a number when I went on one of our first visits, and he said, yes, Yuji is here and to come. So Paul and I got in an auto, and it was about a 30-minute ride to Basavanguti and Bull Temple, where Yuji was staying in Chandrasekhar's little house. And it was a very small little house. Well, this was the meeting of an old friend I hadn't seen for 12 years. So when we knocked on the door and someone opened it, I looked in the room, and it was a very small room, and there were maybe 4 or 5 people sitting on the floor. And there was Yuji sitting on the floor, dressed in a white kurta and pajama. And he got up when seeing me and came forward. He had a beautiful smile on his face, I remember looking at him and saying, yeah, it's the same UG that I knew in Switzerland. And he was very warm and cordial and welcomed me to Bangalore and offered me a place to sit. The first thing he said is, why have you come? I said, you know why I've come. I've come to talk to you. And he said, said something about, well, I have nothing to give, nothing to offer. Nice meeting you. And he said, bye, ta-ta. I said, come on, UG. I said, I come all this way. Don't brush me off. And I laughed. And he grinned and said, sit down. You're welcome. Tell me about yourself. And I said, well, to know what's more important is tell me about yourself. And as he talked to me, and as he was talking about what had happened to him, he was talking to it in a very simple matter and physiological terms. I right away saw and could sense that the man was the same man. He looked the same. But there was something entirely different about him. And as I tried to look into his eyes and find Yuji, I couldn't find the Yuji that I had known. There was something else, something different there. And there was just a vacancy. And the more I looked, the deeper and deeper, I went into a black hole, as it were. Fathomless depth. It had no bottom. It was just infinity, so to speak. And it was frightening in a way, because there was no end, no bottom, no arrival, no point to land on. And I sensed, oh my God, you know, this man has got it. He's there. He's in that state, whatever it is. And so I found my place. I said, I know my place. I'm with the real McCoy, you know.
You've come home.
I've come home, yeah. And
but what about your bliss and pain and headache? That's still happening?
I talked to him about all that, and he listened very patiently to me. And he said to the end of it all, he said, if it has a life, it will live. And just go with it. Just, you know. He said, I had so many headaches in my before this calamity happened to me. He said, I went through all these bizarre experiences. He said, and if it has a life, if it's real, it'll have a life and will... you know, function in you.
He's quoting Krishnamurti.
Yeah, he said, but just don't pay any attention to it, he said.
Okay. Yeah, but he's quoting what Krishnamurti said to him.
To him, right.
Now he's saying it to you.
Later I learned that, you know. From
You didn't know at that time. Okay.
No, I didn't know. So, but it was also the typical Indian answer that anyone, these birds give. They all say that. Yeah, typical. It's a typical answer, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we spent several weeks with UG almost every day. We met Parveen Babi. Valentine was there, and Parveen. We didn't see much of Parveen. She was in and out with going in and out with Valentine. She was very, very beautiful, I remember. And Mahesh had gone back to Bombay to work on some project. So
yeah, he was becoming a famous film director at that point.
I didn't meet him in Bangalore. So.
But he was becoming famous, right? Just at that point.
Yeah, just becoming. Yeah. Just because he's becoming a director. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And So that was, and I remember I asked Paul, what do you think of this guy? You've seen the other one, and now you've seen this one, you know, the two Krishnamurtis. And he said, the other one, there was a distance, there was a platform that he was on, and there were people around him, and there was a itinerary and a program and a time to talk and a time to stop. This guy just talks, goes on all day. And there's no platform. Anyone can come and listen to him and sit there with him. And he doesn't give any, you know, he treats everybody the same, he said. I noticed that right away. He just has the enthusiasm and interest to talk to anybody. No matter if the guy's a madman, he still has the interest to talk to him. He doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any definitions, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah. Doesn't say, oh, you know, this guy, write some guy off and say, fuck off, buddy. You know. Yeah. But well, I noticed there were a lot.
Talk to him? Did Parveen talk to him, or did you see him interact with Parveen?
I didn't know as much interaction going on. I know one afternoon, Paul and I, at the end of Ramadan, which is the end of the Muslim month of fasting, and they have a celebration at the end of it where they break the fast. And there were some problems going on in Bangalore, some rioting going on. Minor rioting. And I remember we saying to Yuji one afternoon that, well, we're going back to the hotel, and he was walking out to the street with us, and he said don't go the usual way, and he said don't go that way, and he said go this way, and he told the rickshaw guy where to go. And that was because of the rioting, and he was concerned that we should, you know, be protected, you know, from getting into any trouble and so forth. But anyway, after hanging out with him, I was beginning to get a feel of what Yuji was saying, and he was really blasting JK a lot of really, really coming on strong about that JK was selling bogus flights on bogus flights, tickets to bogus flights.
Right.
And that a lot of blasting going on. And I was thinking, well, he's blasting my attachments, you know, I have to JK. But, you know, I had still a lot of strong feelings that JK was something very special.
Yeah.
So this went on, and finally we told Yuji that we were going to Chennai for a while.
To see JK?
And that we would rendezvous with him later in Mumbai. He said that he was going to be in Bombay later, and gave us the timing, the dates. So Paul and I went back to Chennai, and we listened to JK again. And I remember, again, this is the first time in India, though. And I remember, you know, being swept up by what he was saying, and very much, you know, interested in what he had to say. And feeling that he was really something very, very special. I remember Aldous Huxley once said, meeting J.K. is like meeting the Buddha.
Mm.
And I remember that phrase, and I was sitting there on the ground, and he was sitting there on a small raised platform in a chair, dressed. Oh, he was sitting cross-legged on the platform. There wasn't a chair, and he was dressed in very beautiful Indian, you know, garb. You know, very very fine tailored clothes. And I thought, yeah, he looks like what the Buddha would look like, I guess. And it, we have such a rare experience to sit here and listen to him. And so we listened to a number of talks, and one evening Paul and I were invited to attend a music recital at Krishnamurti's center there, the Arya Vihar. Was it the Arya Vihar? No, not Place of the Aryans. No, no. Visanti Vihar. And he was there, and there was a musician there that a singer, I believe. And I remember a number of times looking at Krishnamurti, who was sitting in the back, and always when I looked at him, he always looked directly at me, and it made me uncomfortable, and I had to turn away. And so after the talk was, I mean, after the recital was over, we left, Paul and I, and we were standing by a pond, and suddenly Krishnamurti came along by himself, and he walked up to us and said hello, and we said hello, and he asked us how we came to know about the recital, and I told him that Mrs. Jayalakshmi had invited us, and he said, oh. And then I said, do you remember me, Jake? I called him Krishnaji. I said, do you remember me? And he said, looked at me, said, are you here for the Theosophical get-together? I said, oh, no, no, no. I said, I met you in Rishi Valley in 1967, I said. And he went, oh, Lord, he said. Then he remembered, and he said, oh, Lord, lighting the tree, he said. And I said, yeah, we lit the tree up and made the staging. And he said, oh, whoa. So anyway, we chatted for a little while, but I didn't have any desire or inclination to talk to him about what had happened to me. That seemed unimportant to me, and so then he said he was going for his evening walk, and his doctor was joining him, and they would be going. And he said, "We'll see you again," and, you know. And I said, "Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And good night." And so that was the end of that.
And yeah, you had seen Krishnamurti, you know, looked at each other without speaking a few months before.
Yeah.
But that, when you said, do you remember me, you didn't mean, you weren't referring to the recent event.
Yeah.
You were referring to the 12 years before.
Yeah.
You didn't want to refer to just a couple months ago?
No, I don't know. It's just, I was very confused, kind of.
Okay.
So, Paul and I decided to go to Bombay later, and we listened to Krishnamurti's talks, and chit-chat with a lot of friends. We had made a lot of friends that were there listening to the talks. And so we, I'm not sure how we got to, I think we took a plane and landed in Bombay, and we went to Raj's house, flat in Churchgate, and he said we could stay there. But Larry was a friend of Dada's, was there also, and Raj. So there were four of us, and we were all sleeping in the same room. And I said to Raj, I said, maybe we should maybe move on and give you guys some space here. And he said, let me call Dada and see if Dada knows of any place you can stay. So he called Dada, and Dada had a friend that had a flat in Walkeshwar, which is now a very swank place in Mumbai, and there was a flat there, and we could stay there. And the fellow that was staying there was from Ahmedabad, and he had he met me in California and stayed in my house for a few days. So I had met him before.
You mean years before?
Yeah, when Dada was staying at my house in California, some couple of years before. So Paul and I went met the fellow, and I remembered, he remembered meeting me, and so he said, yeah, you can stay here. There's an extra room here, and I'm leaving in a few days and going to Ahmedabad, and I'll just leave the key with you, and you can stay here as long as you want. Indians are very hospitable, very, very sweet.
So whose place was it? Whose place was it?
I'm trying to remember his name now.
This guy you're talking about, it was his place. Do you think you met him? Do you think you met him in California?
He stayed in my house in California. He came to visit Dada.
That's right. See, he was connected to Dada, so it's not that coincidental. Yeah.
Yeah, and he knew Rajneesh. He was a seeker, you know. He knew them all.
Yeah.
So I found out that a lot of spiritual people stayed at his flat. Rajneesh stayed there. Yuji stayed there. Dada stayed there. So I was in a very holy place. So after he left, Paul and I stayed on, and we were just kind of living like Indians, you know. And we stayed maybe a month, I think, there in Bombay. And then Yuji finally arrived, and we started. And Yuji was staying at Vijayanand's flat in Bandra, and Parveen Bobby was there, and Valentine, and Mahesh. That's where I met Mahesh. And again, you know, made contact with Yuji, and I introduced Raj to Yuji. And Raj didn't really take to him too much, because Yuji could be quite devastating, the experience. He was blasting, you know, everything. And Raj couldn't take the blast on JK, I think, that was coming out. Yuji, whatever is in you that you think is important, Yuji would tune into right away. He found out what it was within seconds, and he would just blast that. Mm-hmm. He was very, very intuitive and had access to the contents of your consciousness. And whatever was there that was you were attached to, or that he felt was blocking you in some way, he would punch vigorously. And so, you know, if you had the guts to hang around him and take it, then he could blast all this shit that was there, and that stuff was what was keeping you from functioning more efficiently as just a human being. If you thought you were spiritual, you're in trouble, because he would, you know, really punch holes in all this spiritual stuff that people think that they are, and hold sacred, and blah blah blah.
Right.
Anyway. There's a mixture, a dichotomy here, that here Yuji is giving forth all these pure, you know, ideas and statements, which seem to be the very purest form of purity of that India produces, so you could call it spiritual, you know, but capital S. And all these other characters were the low grade spirituality. They were people that were low grade, you know.
Yeah.
They had some experiences, some, you know, some energy, but it wasn't that. It wasn't the full, clean, clear thing. Of course, this is what, you know, you have to take it on what Yuji was saying, and possibly with a grain of salt, you know. You needed to also blast him and find out what he was really saying. Very tricky, Yuji is. And he plays infinite games with you to make you dig in and to search your soul to find out and to put faith in yourself eventually and not in the other. It's okay to have a guru, but a guru, you can't lean on the guru. The guru just says, if you fall, get up, walk. That's all. So, anyway, that was the beginning of a very, very Ah, profound relationship. I think Eugene became the turning point in my life.
Oh, there's a telephone.
Excuse me a sec.
Yes, Scott.
That was my good friend Arun Babani, who was a Rajneesi and met Yuji, and that ended his his interest in Rajneesi.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But Arun is a writer, a very sweet man. His wife's very nice, and I go to their house for dinner in Bandra. So.
But you met them a long time ago. You met this guy.
No, I just met Arun when I came to India on this last trip. A few years back.
Okay. Yeah. But he had met UG on his own, independently of you.
Yeah, independently of me, yeah.
So here you...
Book on UG, say the some sayings of UG that he had written down.
Right.
So
here you are, and this is in early 1980, you've now found the guy that you think is worth paying attention to.
Yeah, and there's a some kind of relationship. You can see him, you can touch him, you can be with him for hours.
Yeah,
there was no appointment necessary. You know,
just that was unique. I don't think any gurus are like that.
No, I don't know.
Maybe some cavemen that you go visit. Anybody can see the caveman, or you know, in certain, but most. Well-known gurus, there's maybe a bit of formality going on.
Yeah, I think maybe that Russian guy, what was his name? Lispinski followed...
Gurdjieff.
Gurdjieff was similar in a way.
Okay, all right.
People hung around him a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of open door policy.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy and moving around a lot.
Yes.
Telling people to get lost. And
what'd you say?
Telling people to get lost.
Yeah.
There's nothing to get, so get out. So.
Yeah. But it was undeniable that he had a vibration and emanation coming off him that you had never seen before.
Which one?
It was undeniable that there was an emanation, a vibration, a frequency coming off of Yuji you'd never seen or experienced before.
Not the intensity, yeah.
So yeah.
Vibrance, yeah. Yeah,
and you don't think it wasn't a projection of you?
No. It has, because other people were experiencing the same thing. It's such a variety of experiences being around him, and they would come in the most unpredictable places. You know, in the middle of North Beach on a street corner. Suddenly,
yeah. One of the YouTubes I saw of him, it was in a gambling place in Las Vegas. Just talking to someone on the carpet zone.
We had gone to lunch one day in North Beach to an Italian restaurant. Terry and Krim and Paul and I and Yuji, and when we left, we were walking along the street. And there's an island there on Columbus Avenue there, and we stopped to wait for the light to change to green, and you just started talking all of a sudden, and you know we were there 10 or 15 minutes on that island, spellbound. Suddenly something clicked, and Yuji was just this other Yuji that this other dimension took over. And we were just utterly, you know, listening to this purity, this pure, you know, clarity was pouring out of him. And here, and then I thought, Jesus, on the middle of Columbus Avenue.
In the middle of the street.
Yeah, so, you know. And Yuji said, if this doesn't operate in the middle of Times Square, then it's not worth a tinker's dam. Yeah, he often said that if this peace that he has, this tranquility, this calmness, this serenity, this doesn't operate in the midst of a traffic jam, you know, or a battlefield, it's not worth anything at all.
Yeah, yeah. So how long did you stay in India in that period?
Well, we went to see Dada after, just before we left India. We called Dada and said we'd like to visit with him before, and maybe we could stay with him at his, where he was staying, because he was near the airport. And he said, yeah, he could arrange that. He was staying with a doctor friend who lived not too far from the airport. So Paul and I took a bus and went out to see him. And I remember Dada said he'd like to talk to Paul first, and would I mind waiting in the garden? People had not had a garden in their house. So I said, okay. So he talked to Paul for about an hour, and then he came out and called me, and we chit-chatted for a little bit about having seen him for a while. There was still a little bit of a strained energy between Dada and me, because I had, you know, had been close to him and then told him that it was time to move on, you know.
Right.
I wanted to move on with my life in a different way. But I have to say this. All that was dead. It died. And it wasn't there. Dada was living in the present. And there wasn't any animosity there, you know. And
he was not trying to be a guru anymore.
A little bit. So he asked me about my experience, because I either Paul told him or I told him. So I again related the experience, and he listened to it, and again the same answer. Yeah, if it has meaning, it will live. Yeah. Because that's what I think someone told him also about his experience.
Right. So, well, what do you think of that statement now? Did it live?
Yeah, it lived. The headaches went on and on and on and on.
For another 20 years.
Yeah. And did I tell you about how they stopped?